This is Voices of Our World. I'm your host, Eileen Bott.
I'm white. I grew up in the suburbs. I like to use adverbs to show I went to school. Absolutely, I totally, really, truly.
The following comment does not reflect the views of the producers of Voices of Our World, of Mary Knoll, or of the station presenting this program. On his radio show, Bill Bennett said, to reduce crime, you could, if that were your sole purpose, you could abort every black baby in this country, and your crime rate would go down. That would be an impossible, ridiculous, and morally reprehensible thing to do, but your crime rate would go down. Our former Secretary of Education, the author of the Book of Virtues, notwithstanding admitted millions in Vegas gambling losses, William Bennett says these remarks have been taken out of context. The context was abortion, race, and crime. Better? Well, he's not swinging out there alone. A new study of race and crime by the New Century Foundation, titled The Color of Crime, Race, Crime, and Justice in America, agrees with Bennett and looks at exactly that, and not at intersecting economic factors, including environmental, educational, or opportunity. Yes, you can say blacks are disproportionately represented in both the U.S. military and in our prisons, but we're reticent to put in writing the fact that generations of being kept down leads to generations acting out of frustration and desperation. Maybe the color of crime is simply the color of poverty, and no law, amendment, or affirmative action will reform our underlying attitudes. Washington, in a curtsy to credit card companies, has just made it next to impossible to seek bankruptcy protection. So if you're in trouble, you're really in trouble. Against the urging of the National Council of Churches, Congress is still considering $50 billion in cuts to social programs. And in the wake of Katrina, more bad news for poor folks, hoping to at least get a decent job rebuilding their city. At the request of several Republican congresspersons, President Bush has suspended the Davis-Bacon Act, which would have ensured on-site workers no less than the locally prevailing wage. The NAACP has been working for a single class of citizenship for all Americans since 1909. The organization's Legal Defense Fund began their work in 1940. Kathy Golden speaks with the Associate Director Counsel for the LDF, Jacqueline Berrien.
Welcome to the program, Jacqueline.
Thank you.
And you couldn't be with the organization at a more interesting moment in our history, I would think.
Well, you know, it's hard to say. I think all of the time that I've spent here has been very interesting, but certainly there are some unique questions and issues that are presented post-Hurricane Katrina.
Right. Let's talk about some of them, because all of a sudden, and Katrina helped in a strange kind of way, refocus our understanding that racial inequality has never disappeared. It lingers over our landscape still.
Well, absolutely. And one of the things, if you look at the Legal Defense Fund's website, we sometimes use in our publications the tagline, if you think the struggle is over, think again. And we've been using that for a number of years before Hurricane Katrina. But I do think that it is just an incredible moment in terms of United States history in just the massive scale of the devastation made it clear that not only race but class in this country have a profound impact on opportunities, even such a basic question as one's ability to survive and to take steps to survive such a catastrophe.
Wolf Blitzer made a comment. He said, we're looking at something that the pictures were showing us. They are very, very poor. And then he followed that with, and they are very, very black. And as politically incorrect as that might be construed, he had really thought out loud for all of us. So did you find that offensive, or did you find that maybe it was just honest and we need to pay attention to that?
Well, I didn't hear that moment, but I definitely do recall when the media began to comment openly on what to that point had been an elephant in the room, which was the fact that while this devastation and tragedy affected many, many people, the photos of people who were stranded, particularly in New Orleans, and absolutely desperate for basic aid and survival, were overwhelmingly black and evidently quite poor, without any means of really escaping the city and without any means of surviving once the flood hit. So I don't think there's any question. If you look at New Orleans, is a predominantly black city, was a predominantly black city before Hurricane Katrina, and what we saw was a great deal of the population of the city left behind.
And, you know, you heard Kanye West say, President Bush doesn't care about black people. But were they paying little attention to attempting to rescue these people and get them out in time because that population didn't matter to them? Or was it just as much a slam dunk against Democrats?
Well, let me just say for the record that the Legal Defense Fund is a nonpartisan organization, and I truly don't see this situation through a partisan lens. I think the government failed and failed miserably, and I don't think that party affiliation is ultimately what was important to the people who were in such desperate situations and conditions. I do think, though, that something I heard Senator Barack Obama say was quite resonant, and it really goes to this question of intent. Discrimination law today and the kinds of issues that the Legal Defense Fund works on today are rarely presented in the way they were 50 years ago, where people would say, you can't go to this school or you can't eat in this restaurant or you can't sleep in this hotel because of the color of your skin. The far more common situation today is that there's nothing explicitly stated. There is no clear evidence of any intentional discrimination. Nevertheless, the impact is profoundly racial. The impact of decisions, the impact of acts or omissions, official and private acts and omissions, will be quite clearly correlated with race and increasingly with class as well. And I think ultimately, I don't know that it matters much whether the kind of desperation that we see resulted because someone said explicitly, you will not be cared for in this moment of need because of the color of your skin, or whether the effect of a series of decisions and omissions and acts is the same. I don't think that it ultimately matters very much, certainly not to the people who were immediately impacted by it, nor I think ultimately to the people who witnessed it, because on such a massive scale, you know, it's impossible, I think, to see that kind of human suffering and not be moved and not be compelled to search for answers and to search for ways that it could change in the future.
Which would you feel acts as a bigger detriment, the class or financial aspect or the racial aspect? Or are they equal?
Well, I think it's often impossible to disentangle those things. Let me give you an example. Since the hurricane, we have been told about a situation where a black professional in the city of New Orleans was stranded, trying to basically escape when floodwaters started to rise, and at some point was fleeing and happened to literally reach a levee at about the same time that someone who allegedly had been out shooting a gun or who was accused of being a sniper had been in the same vicinity. The police came upon them and didn't see the people who they were originally chasing, did see a different black man, and shot him. Now, this victim, you know, wasn't a poor person, but he was a black person.
Mm-hmm.
And he was easily confused with the person who was being chased, who quite possibly was a poor black person. The way that the decision was made was based on race. The predominant group of people who were left behind in the city were poor and black. But when a decision was made in that instant to shoot back or to shoot at a person who was believed to have been a sniper, the thing that was important at that moment or in that instant was race.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that kept both of those people behind, they were very different in terms of income or class, but they shared a race. I can think of a number of examples that I've heard of situations. I mean, actually, maybe an even better example is, I don't know if you've heard about the confrontation or the allegations about the confrontation at a bridge that would have been an exit out of the New Orleans area and a flooded area and into adjacent Jefferson Parish. And people who were there have said that the police from Jefferson Parish or from towns within Jefferson Parish stopped him at the bridge. Now, most of the people in the crowd were black. Most of the people in the crowd were probably poor. There were a few white people in the crowd who were neither poor nor black. But because the reaction of the police seemed to be tempered by or dictated by their perception that this was a large crowd of poor black people trying to escape New Orleans, everyone was affected by the decision to close off the bridge. And at that point, being white or being rich wasn't enough to bypass what happened.
Right.
So I think that to the extent that racial discrimination and racial prejudice is about dehumanizing people, every human being needs to be concerned about it. Because at any given moment, you could be subjected to a decision that really represents that kind of dehumanization.
Absolutely. You know, if people were taking supplies out of a store, they were appropriating necessities if they were white, and if they were black, they were looting. The same thing with shooting a gun in the air to get help. It was seen as shooting at the help. It is a matter of perception, and that's very up in the air, and we all need to examine that. The words out of Barbara Bush were very offensive, understandably, to a great many people. These folks were underprivileged in the first place, therefore being crowded into the Superdome is actually working out well for them?
I mean, I think that the ability to dehumanize, to see any sort of positive to those conditions and to the situation that people were living in is stunning. And it's also quite a sad commentary to think that in the richest nation in the world, that the kind of quality of life that really has been tolerated for many, many people long before this hurricane. The hurricane put a lens, a magnifying glass on the suffering, but the suffering, in fact, existed. And for whatever reasons, you know, many, many of us are able to ignore that in the day-to-day. Those are all issues that have a immediate impact on really whether or not poor people's opportunities and life chances will change in the wake of this hurricane.
Thank you so very much for being with us today, Jacqueline Berrien of the NAACP's Legal Defense Fund. Thanks, Jacqueline.
Will we ever act as if all people are created equal? Let us know what you think. Email us. Go to our website, www.voicesofourworld.org. Just click on Contact Us or call us at 877-MARY-KNOWLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. Well, that's all for this week, and thanks for listening. James Lowen and Jacqueline Berrien are just two of the voices of our world. This week's show was produced by Kathy Golden, and I'm your host, Eileen Bott. You heard music today by Nez Ha, Patty Larkin, and Abel Maripol. Our website is www.voicesofourworld.org. You can listen, learn more about today's guests and topics, and answer our weekly question. Check it out, www.voicesofourworld.org. To learn more about Mary Knoll or try Mary Knoll magazine in English or Spanish, call 877-MARY-KNOLL. That's 877-MARYKNOLL. And please join us next time for more Voices of Our World.